Welcome to another edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. Jeff Fiegel's John Schmelk. Final day of OTAs, and Jeff, obviously it's an important part of the offseason. Mandatory minicamp next week as the Giants get ready to wrap up their spring program.
Yep, last one. I think the guys, their cars aren't running yet because they still have next week for the minicamp, but I think that's the last piece of the puzzle going into training camp. Very important that everybody will be here next week, and then the Giants can get ready to go, and we'll see what the team is shaping up to be like for the 2017 season.
Most important thing to accomplish at mandatory minicamp next week?
One is roster. Who are your guys that are going to be, penciled in as starters and then going into training camp from there?
And, of course, the young guys want to be able to hit the ground running when they get to training camp in August. The more these rookies are ready to go, the more chance they'll have to get on the field quickly once the season starts in September. If you want to watch the rest of Big Blue Kickoff Live, click off of Twitter, go to either the Giants mobile app or go to Giants.com, and you can watch the remainder of the program there, including my interview with Art Stapleton from the Bergen Record. And now, of course, if you're on Giants.com or the Giants mobile app, you can continue watching with me and Jeff Fiegel. We'll take your calls early and often. The second half of the show will be with Art Stapleton. So get on the lines at 201-939-4513. We'll get to your calls as soon as they start coming in. We'll get to them real quick. You've heard enough from us. We want to hear from you again. It's 201-939-4513 or on Twitter at hashtag GiantsChat. All right, Fiegs, we've been watching practice now for the last 3 weeks. It's exciting to see some of the new guys, exciting to see some of the old guys getting healthy and getting back.
Yep.
And it's just one of those things where I think you're seeing a team come together that really can do something significant this year, barring any serious injuries, which
knock on wood,
they have done so far.
Everybody knocks on wood all the time. I think you're right. I think that what happens in the OTAs right now is that there's kind of a sense of, okay, we got the young guy. Don't know much about him other than what we scouted him and coming into the draft and things like that. So you really get a good look at them for 3 weeks on the field against good competition. And like I said, to me, it's important that the roster is starting to be built, number one. And number two, a depth chart is starting to be put together. Because when they come in July, into July for training camp, there's going to be a chart there that's going to have your name. And it's going to be either 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5 down the list. It will give you a better idea of who this team is going to be made of. We'll do our best at trying to guess that at a later date.
Yes, we will. That's
but
true.
That's always a lot of fun. Like I said, this is what it's all about. It's a chance to see these young guys coming out of the draft, who the free agents are. And for a player, it's important for them to, number one, be here. Number two, giving all the effort you can and showing the character that you have to make this football team, because this is always, you are always being evaluated no matter what you do, John. It's in the weight room. It's in the classroom. It's on the field. It's in the training room. So it's really, really important to give that first impression, if you will, over the last 3 weeks. Now, minicamp, here's the difference between minicamp and OTAs. In minicamp, it's all about the veterans. The OTAs is all about mixing in some of the younger guys and this and that. But when it comes into minicamp, those younger guys, they're not going to be getting that many reps. It's all about the veterans in minicamp.
Absolutely. And, of course, minicamp starts next week. We'll have all the coverage of minicamp and practice and everything else on Giants.com. Make sure you check it out and you tune in. I'll be out of practice. We'll have news and notes from each day. We'll have BBK every day. The times will vary because Ben McAdoo has decided to schedule practice.
How dare him schedule his practices around our show?
I have filed a formal complaint.
Where is that department?
And then I was laughed at and kicked out of the second floor.
Is there that department in this building? There is not.
No.
But we can complain as long as right here.
I believe the department is called We're Football and We'll Do Whatever the Hell We Want, which, by the way, is the way it should be.
No question.
We're just joking around. Obviously, we're not going to play.
No, absolutely.
201-939-4513. I told you, we'll get to your calls early and often. We have some open lines if you want to get in. Now's the time. Get on the phones. Dom in New Jersey will lead us off. Hi, Dom.
Hi, guys. How are you doing?
What's up,
well,
Dom? Happy Friday. What do you got for us today?
I'm good. John, I actually want to start off by saying congratulations, happy anniversary. I know it's been a few years since you got married.
My anniversary is coming up on the 28th. This will be year number 3.
Wow, nice.
Already?
Yeah.
Correct. This will be our three years in the books. It's going quick, and now we have our first kid coming this year. We went into the new house last week.
Got a lot of firsts.
Boy, stuff's happening, man. Let me tell you, I am I'm mentally fatigued. Let me put it that way.
Yeah. It does, and let me tell you, life does not slow down once you start having children.
Dude, I was up at 6 o'clock this morning visiting daycare. So trust me, it sucks. Okay, go ahead, Dom. I'm sorry.
Well, no worries. God bless.
Thank you.
So yeah, actually, it's funny. I work in Midtown, right on 45th and 5th.
Nice.
And I ran into the Verizon store yesterday, where I got the pleasure to meet Odell Beckham. So that was very exciting for me. I got a little starstruck, and I never thought I would be the kind to do that. But I go up to him, and I'm just like, you're a few miles away from practice, kind of joking about that. But, the main thing I want to bring up about that is that he seemed very hungry, motivated, excited. He seemed like he had his head in the right spot. So,
well, he was buying a phone. Of course he did.
Yeah.
He was very motivated and focused about that phone that he wanted in the Verizon store.
Yeah, so that was very exciting to meet him and, really just get that opportunity to, meet one of my favorite players of all time. So that was cool. And I wanted to ask you guys a couple of questions. The first one being about David Harris from the Jets. I read an article the other day saying that he'd be a great fit. I know that, B.J. Goodson has been kind of taking over the responsibilities, trying to see if he could be our three-down linebacker. But I want to know if you guys thought that he could be a good veteran to get in the mix over here.
Well, here's the thing about David Harris, and I like to get Feek's takes on it too. I think if you simply take the players they are now, I think it would be hard to argue that B.J. Goodson's a better player today than David Harris is. I don't think you can make
that
argument.
Yeah.
So if you want to say, look, you bring David Harrison, make him the first and second down linebacker, stop the run. B.J. Goodson learns on him for another year or two. Will that make the better team today? Probably. I think it's hard to argue that. But then you get into the periphery stuff. Do you want to retard B.J. Goodson's development by bringing in a veteran? How much money is David Harris going to want? How many years is David Harris going to want? Is David Harris going to still want to be a three-down linebacker? I'm not sure he has the speed to be a three-down linebacker anymore. So those are the other things I think, Dom, you have to take into consideration. Good player. Sure. Would he upgrade the talent? Certainly. But do the other parts of that equation mix in terms of what the Giants want to do?
I agree with John. And the other thing about it is that money is always an issue. Health is always another issue, and 10-year linebackers are another big issue.
Right.
So I think all those can take into consideration. Now, David Harris is probably going to be a guy that's going to have to sit there and wait for a job for a little bit because of those things that I just said. Unless he says, hey, I'll play for a minimum, I'm healthy, I'll pass a physical, then a different story.
But remember, he also declined to take a pay cut with the Jets, and that's one of the reasons he was let go. So I don't think he's going to go sign for the minimum somewhere.
If he does, then
right.
I think a lot of teams would be, no problem, come on in.
Absolutely.
That's just not what it's going to be like. So. What a great career, though, he had with the Jets. I mean, very good player.
Good guy, too. Good leader.
Yep, absolutely. So, I mean, listen, I feel like he'll play another down in the National Football League where nobody knows. But, it'll be interesting. I think that right now where the linebackers are on this team, you've got a lot of competition there. And I think the Giants are really excited about Goodson.
Sure, sure. And my last thing, and I'll take your comments off the air.
Sure.
Thanks for giving me that breakdown. Actually makes sense, especially with the cap situation, considering the money he'd be looking for and the development of B.J. Goodson. I totally agree, and I'd rather, B.J. Goodson at this point to kind of build into our middle linebacker for the future, but we'll see. But the last thing I wanted to talk about, I actually listened to David Rosenberg or Rosenthal over on ESPN radio, and he had mentioned a couple weeks back that Eli Manning didn't look really too sharp in practice during the first week of OTAs. Granted, I get that it's, kind of getting the feelers back out there and getting back in the swing of things. But I want to know how you think Eli Manning might have transitioned to, I guess, at first not really producing in practice to, over the last few days I've seen some tweets regarding his play and that he's been doing a great job in practice, throwing some touchdowns. So, it's a good sign. I'll take your comments off the air. And thanks, guys, so much. I look forward to listening to the rest of the summer.
Thank you, Don. Appreciate the call, man. I don't know where people got that Eli wasn't sharp in OTA practice.
What do they know about what is sharp or not?
Well, let me say this. The media's out there. They've had 10. This is going to be the 10th OTA. The media will be out there today for the third time. So they've been out there for 3 out of the 10. Do you know who the only person is, or the only two people that are out there that covers the team that are out there for all 10 OTAs, or at least 9 out of 10 in my case? Me and Dan Salamone.
Okay.
And neither one of us wrote that Eli Manning has not been sharp, so I don't know where that came from.
Well, it comes from just people thinking that they know football. And listen,
no, but they're not there. But they're not there to see it. How do they know if he's sharp or not if they're not there to watch?
Well, somebody told them. Somebody told them.
And, guys, look, what Eli Manning looks like in an OTA in May Come or on. June doesn't mean a hill of beans.
Listen, this is the start of the off season. It's like you're just wiping off the dust. I mean, you're getting things going again. Please, let's just wait and see. I mean, you got some new personnel that he's dealing with. I know he's very excited about Brandon Marshall. I mean, so he overthrew him a couple times. Well, he doesn't know him that well yet. So let's just hope in 2 months from now he's not overthrowing him in preseason games.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, come on. It's OTAs. I mean, really. And it doesn't mean anything. It really doesn't. Now, would it mean something, John, if all of a sudden he can't throw a ball 60 yards anymore and we really saw it?
And I'll tell you what. Yesterday in practice, and I wrote about this on the website, the Giants were doing red zone, green zone drills. And the defense was playing a zone coverage. And Evan Engram goes right past the goal line, turns and sits. He's right in the middle of a zone between Janoris Jenkins on the outside and Landon Collins at safety. Eli winds up. And you know Eli, he is a pretty quick release. He's not a guy that's going to have a really deliberate wind-up.
Yeah, especially down there.
He winds up and fires this ball. It's as hard as I've ever seen him throw like a 15-yard pass, and he zipped in there right before Landon Collins got his hands in, coming from behind Engram to catch the pass. The arm strength
there
is still there.
It's
Trust
called,
me.
It's called mustard.
Oh,
he put a little mustard on the ball.
It was a laser. It was
yeah.
a rocket.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And you know, when you talk about that green red zone, I get a little bit excited about what's going to happen this season with the green and the red zone with Engram and Brandon Marshall. Okay?
Boy,
because
game changers, man.
Now, and I guess we're not even talking about Beckham and Shepard. So, I point of emphasis, last year, horrible. Red zone. Horrible at scoring. It's going to be different this year if they can get the running game going too, which, again, I'm excited about that. You got some guys in there. You got drones. You got some guys that can get to the end zone, either running or passing. So it should be exciting.
What, I think
because they got to score some points this year, John.
More, certainly.
I mean, seriously.
I mean, they were in the 20s last year in terms of, you know,
and thank God they had the defense to hold teams, you know, to less than that 11 times.
And as Ben McAdoo likes to say, there's no guarantee you're going to get the same thing year to year. So,
no, because you have injuries. Yeah. You have, listen, guys, there's a lot of guys that play better in their second, third, fourth year or not as good. You know what I mean? It's just all about – but I will tell you this. I like the attitude, and one thing you do have going for the defense is that they're coming off a good year. They're coming off a little bit of a – you know, they have a lot of confidence, and a lot of – these 10 of the 11 guys are going to be back, and that's huge for them. It really is because they know each other. They back each other. They have confidence in each other. There's camaraderie there. And then it's a little plug and play here and there. But for the most part, that defense is collectively a good group. They like each other. Now, offensively, that's where we got to start getting the gel together. We got to start having those guys come together. The line, the receivers, the running backs, everybody there. So, you know, if you're a New York Giants fan, you got to be pretty darn excited about the season coming up.
Yeah, I don't see how you're not. And Jeff, I think really what will solve a lot of the issues he had last year, including – the red zone, including trying to beat that too deep coverage. Just run the ball.
Well,
just run the ball. I'm not telling you have to be, you know, the Dallas Cowboys where you're, you know, running Ezekiel Elliott
better than you did
27 times a game, but you can't be averaging 3.6 yards per carry. It's not going to work. You got to get that over 4 yards per carry, and you got to at least be a threat to run the ball at least consistently and maybe bang a few big plays here or there.
And that's what I was just going to say. You know, what's missing out of that running game that I didn't see a lot last year that is exciting is a big play.
Yeah.
You know, get those 20-yard runs. Even, you know, the statistic that we follow is the 10-yard runs. You know, they don't seem like much, but, you know, the 10, the 20, the 30, the 40-yard runs, I think with Perkins in there, who's got some speed, you know, and to hit that hole quickly and get a, you know, get a nice big run here and there, defenses will have to start to respect the Giants' running game, and then, good God, if they have to respect the running game, who knows what's going to happen with the passing game then.
Now, we went through these stats early in the year, but I'm sure I forgot, so I'm sure you did too.
Oh, really? Okay. No, I'm just kidding.
With your memory? Absolutely.
Yeah.
How many runs over 20 yards did the Giants have last year?
Five.
Seven.
Close.
There were only 8 teams that had fewer runs of 20 yards or more. How many runs of 40 yards or more did the Giants have?
None.
Zero.
That's why I'd like to see one or two in there.
And Paul Perkins has that ability.
Of course he does. Yeah. And really, that's an exciting play. Because, I mean, it's a bang-bang, you know? And you just haven't seen that in a while. And really, that can turn – that's a fun play. And the linemen get jacked up about that.
Oh, wow. Guess which NFL team – one NFL team led the league in 20-plus yard runs, and they had 8 more than the team in second place. Who do you think that team was? I'll give you 3 guesses, and I don't think you'll get it.
Okay, but somebody's probably going to say Dallas, but it's not Dallas.
No, Dallas is third. They had 17.
Okay. I'm not going to get it. Is it Arizona?
No, that's a good guess because they have obviously David Johnson. Arizona had 10. They finished in 12th.
Wow. Okay, just give me this.
It actually was AFC team.
Okay.
And it was the team that led the NFL in rushing and yards per game, but it's not a team you usually think about in terms of a big-time
Pittsburgh.
Rushing attack.
Nope. No?
Pittsburgh. Where is Pittsburgh on this
That's
list?
A good guess, too. Is it Buffalo?
Bingo.
It's Buffalo.
It's the Buffalo Bills. They had 27 runs of 20 yards or more and 5 runs of 40 yards or more.
5 of 40. Giants had 0. 27 of how many?
They also had 11 fumbles, by the way, Buffalo, which is second most in the league at the running back position.
Yeah, all those runs, and then they fumbled at the end.
Dude, they averaged 5.3 yards per carry. The Cowboys were at 4.8. That's, wow. That is,
And they were 8 more, you said, than the second place team?
The Bills had 27. The Raiders, believe it or not, had 19 in second place. Which that's even more shocking than the Bills.
Now, see, I would have never guessed the Raiders because, I mean, they were all, you know, everybody's like, we need Marshawn Lynch. We need him. We're running game. But, hey, the Raiders are going to be a really good football team next year.
And because a young defense is getting a year older, so they'll improve
a
little
bit. They got Lynch, which will take a little pressure off of Carr, who's coming off of an injury.
I don't know if I'd buy it. I'm not sure if I'm buying it on the whole Marshawn Lynch thing.
Okay, well, Marshawn Lynch isn't going to be the MVP of the league.
Right.
But he's certainly not going to be a total disaster.
I think they should have drafted a young running back. There were so many good running backs in this draft. I think the Raiders should have picked one somewhere in the first 3 rounds of this draft.
Well, yeah, and I don't remember. I mean, Amari Cooper, those guys—they're good, you know. And it was really think about what happened to the Raiders last year. It's very unfortunate that you know that Carr got hurt because they were peaking at the right time.
Yeah, that would have been a fun playoff game.
The Raiders and the Patriots.
The Raiders lost to the Texans, right, in the first round.
Yeah, no chance.
And they would have beat Houston, and with Derek Carr, I think they probably would have beaten Houston in that game.
I do too.
And then you would add Raiders Patriots in the second round. That would have been a fun playoff game.
A great playoff game.
Fun playoff game.
I would think the Patriots would win, but I think with Carr, you definitely have a chance. The Raider playoff game, they had the quarterback there. Nobody can even know who it is.
Would the Raiders have played the Patriots? You know what? I don't think they would have because they would have reseeded. Did the Raiders win the AFC West or did the Chiefs win the AFC West last year?
The Raiders did.
So then the Raiders would have ended up playing the Steelers and the Patriots would have played the Chiefs, which also would have been a much better playoff game than Patriots-Texans, which was just
I know. And it's amazing to me that the Texans have been in the playoffs the last few years.
Well, when you have one of the best defenses in football, if they could ever figure out a way to solve that quarterback position.
Well, they think they did now.
Yeah, but he's not going to be great in year number one. No. I think Deshaun Watson's going to eventually be a good player, but not in year number one. I still don't know why. I mean, why wouldn't they have just traded like a 7th round pick for Romo? I don't get it. And then draft Watson anyway. Have him there.
I think Romo was. I just think he was done.
I think he was toast physically.
I think that everybody knew it, and it was just that inside the circles.
Honestly, I wouldn't even consider Cutler if I were them.
Oh man, I don't think he wanted to play anymore either.
Well, that might be true too.
You know, and both those guys, they just when you're done, trust me, I know when you're done, you're done. You don't want to play anymore. You don't want to, and it's not so much play the game, John. It's not the game. The game is fun. The game's the best part about it. It's practice, and it's the off season program. It's the lifting. It's the running. It's the wear and tear. A lot of these guys who all of a sudden start getting in their 30s, they have kids. Real life situations start coming into play in your professional career. You start to think about what's more important, the game that I'm playing or my family. And I think a lot of times that's what happens to people. And really, you can't blame them for it. You know, But I really would have liked. Listen, I was a Tony Romo fan. I liked him. I thought he was a great player when he did. And I wish he would have just had a – I mean, it would have been interesting what he would have done with that team this year, with that running game. I mean, Dak Prescott did pretty damn good, but I think that really, a Romo, I don't know.
You wonder if Romo had some type of, like, I don't want to say condition or syndrome, where his bones were just a little bit more brittle. But he had so many, you know, the clavicles, back. And he broke bones in his back. It's not like he had that one disc issue which he got fixed surgically, but then he kept breaking bones. I mean, he was a broken bone in his torso waiting to happen.
The boneyard.
It's amazing. It absolutely was.
Well, it is. It's the you know, each person is different. There's guys that are, their bone density is a lot thicker. Some guys just never break any of their bones, and some guys are just all the time, like Romo.
Drink that milk, kids.
Drink the milk.
Let's go to Hudson in Brooklyn. He's going to be all right. Let's see if we can squeeze in one more if you want to get on the line. Let's go, Hudson. What's up?
Hey, what's going on, John, Jeff? How you guys doing?
Doing great.
All right. Just wanted to talk about the tight end position.
Okay.
How excited I am about the amount of talent that we have on at the position now.
And Hudson, how long has it been since you were able to say that?
Well, yeah, I wouldn't go as the amount
it's been
of.
It's been a good while.
I think that you know, Ingram has upgraded the position. It's what's behind it that I have to figure out a little bit more. I mean,
I wrote this though yesterday, Hudson. Right now, the Giants added Evan Ingram. He's better than any receiving wise. He's better than any player the Giants had at that position last year. And they added Red Ellison, who's a better blocker than anybody they had at that position last
year.
Good point. So it's been upgraded beyond belief.
And I apologize because I wasn't including Rhett.
Yeah.
That's my bad. So, yes, I will agree with you there, because what John just said is that completes the position, if you will, that now you have somebody that can, you know, is a legitimate first-round draft pick who can stretch the middle of the field with that two-deep coverage that everybody plays against the Giants. And now who's going to be the third guy? They're not carrying four.
I don't know.
Oh, I don't know. That's my point. That's what I wanted to bring up.
Sure.
With the 53-man roster, I was thinking – when I went through the numbers and the players, is it possible that we keep four tight ends being Ingram, Jarrell Adams, Ty, and Lacoste, and put Ellison at the fullback position?
Well, no matter what you want to do, you still have to add it to 53. So, you know, I don't think he's going to be a fullback position.
Well, that's the problem. See, that's five. I count Ellison at tight end. So I think you can, Hudson, I think you can keep four, and then Ellison's the swing guy, fullback, tight end. So that would allow you to keep the fourth guy. But you're not keeping four, and then you're keeping Red Ellison.
No.
So it's going to be a battle between
three and
Will Ty, Jarrell Adams, Matt Lacoste, for those third and fourth spots.
For those two spots.
Right.
I disagree. I don't think Adams is on the bubble. Especially, he was a steal coming. He was a steal from last year.
No, Adams isn't on the bubble. He's a draft pick. He's a second round. He's a second year player. I think the bubble is Lacoste and Will Ty. I mean,
I agree.
And if I had to pick it, I think you know who I would go with because of the experience.
I'm not willing to guarantee. I think. I agree. He's ahead in the pecking order. I will not disagree with that. I think you guys are right about that. I'm not putting him in pen yet.
Ty?
No, Adams.
Oh, Adams.
He's not in pen yet.
Well, listen, he's a sixth round pick.
Yep.
Okay, borderline free agent. I mean, teams are willing to get rid of a sixth round draft pick.
Of course they are.
Than a third or second.
Which is why, to me, his name's
not in pen. Let's use it. He's a fringe player.
But one more thing, you guys are forgetting. We got a steal in Jarrell Adams in the sixth round. He probably shouldn't have been still there when we picked in the sixth round. That's why everybody was so excited about him when we got him. So
yeah, but Hudson, that doesn't matter
his
now.
Level of play with his improvement from first to second year, I think he's going to have a really good season. I think he's a sleeper pick for dark horse for breakout player.
No, Hudson, I agree. Hudson, I agree with you. I believe that he can make a big jump. I agree he was a steal in the sixth round. But as Jeff can speak to, once you get into your second or third year, if you're considered a steal in whatever round you were picked in, it doesn't matter what type of player you are at this point. It doesn't really matter, you know, whether or not you have value for the round you were taken. And once you get into your second and third year, you got to show the coaches on the practice field what you can do.
Well, if you're a steal, that means you're doing really well in your second or third year,
and he hasn't
right?
proven he's a
yeah,
steal
so,
yet.
Yeah.
That's
but I will tell you this. They played him at the end of the season. if you remember, he got a lot of playing time at the end of the season. He played a lot on special teams, which is where they start anyways, especially a six-round draft pick. So he will be in the mix. He's definitely a player that can help that offense going into a two tight end set with those receivers. You know, with Ingram and him, those guys can stretch the middle of the field and they're very athletic.
I agree.
So,
and he should also be able to – he's got the size to block, and he does look, he does look a little faster to me in practice this year, Hudson. It looks like he's a little bit more confident in his route run. He's getting down the field.
Oh, he's a year older.
I agree. I would be surprised if Jarrell Adams is not on the roster. I agree. I think he's a much better chance of making it than Lacoste and Ty and, you know, whoever else you want to talk about at tight end. But I'm not willing to hand him a roster spot on June 9th.
That's all right. John, okay, John doesn't hand out roster spots very often.
Yeah, sure.
Shout out to the Shakedown crew.
Okay.
And second thing, I'd like to ask you, if Lacoste stays healthy.
Whoa, big question.
There you go. All right, I know because he's always hurt.
Yeah.
Well, the last 2 years he's been hurt. If he stays healthy and the way he's performing according to what you're writing, John, about the OTAs, if he continues to perform like that, if he stays healthy – does he beat out Will Ty?
He is a shot.
I'll tell you where it's going to come down to, and we say it over and over, and you hear me say it especially that all the time, special teams. That is where the difference is made in that type of a player that you're comparing to apples to apples, okay? Which guy is going to give me the better chance on special teams? Will it be Will Ty or Matt Lacoste? There's your answer.
And to me, if he stays healthy, he's got a shot.
And that's the biggest. That's the
He's
biggest
got a shot.
Check. Yeah, I mean, listen, and unfortunately, like we said about Tony Romo, some guys just can't stay healthy.
And here's the thing with Lacoste. He's going to have to do it in preseason games too. You know,
what
the practice field isn't enough for him. He's going to have to play well in the preseason games to overcome Will Ty's experience.
And he's got to make it through the practices to get into the preseason games.
Right, which is the bigger problem. All right, finally, real quick, Stephanie in Virginia will wrap us up before we get to our interview with Art Stapleton. Stephanie, what's going on? How are you?
What's going on, guys? What's going on? This has got to be a great season to be a Giant fan. I don't understand these Giant fans. First of all, I called in a couple months ago about the Evan Ingram pick. I told Paul DeTino, I said, we think Evan Ingram is going to be a great pick. He fits this offense. For the first time in a long time, I feel we got a Super Bowl team. We are stacked loaded at tight end. And I like the UDFAs that we got, especially the offensive line, and I like that six-round pick.
Okay.
For all those that think Evan Ingram not going to be productive on this team, they're going to eat crow. And I like the Dalvin Tomlinson pick, too. I was high on that pick, too. As you
all right.
My pick is Adam. And we got some players. Now, I ain't going to talk about that pick in round three because I think it could have been used.
Hey, Stephanie, I'm sorry. Dave, we got to let her go. We can't understand this. Stephanie, your phone line was cut out. We were losing you. We couldn't hear what you were saying. Give us a call back into the show. We'll make sure I put you up first. I'll get you on right away. But your
She's
phone
excited
line was,
about the season, though.
And she should be. I think the team is very, very good. So just keep that in mind.
Oh, we're going to get it in.
Real quick. Favorite game.
Real quick. I like this.
Did he play with Jeff Fiegel?
I don't have a great memory.
22 NFL season.
But I'm working on it.
Hundreds of players.
Fiegel's with the Eagles.
Let's see who Jeff remembers.
Let's go. Huh?
Of
my memory. Dave, you feeling confident in me today?
John.
No? What is that?
All right, here we go.
No.
Did you play with Jeff Fiegel?
Yeah, here we go.
Did
all right,
you
we got to make it quick, so that's all right.
With James Williams.
Shade up.
You have no idea.
Yes, I do.
Did you play with James Williams?
Yes, I did play with James Williams.
When did you
Move
play with James
screen.
Williams?
I don't want to have to.
Well, stop cheating.
Well, it's just
the
right
honor
there.
System.
James Williams, I played in Arizona. He's a wide receiver.
Wrong. You played with him in Seattle, and he was a wide receiver.
Damn it, they're always the closest team. It's like 1 year apart. J-Dub. He was a punt returner, wide receiver.
He was. That is true.
And I did, yeah. Damn it.
Wrong team, though, buddy. Seattle for 2000 and 2000.
You know, you rushed me because we have to go off the air, so that's what it was.
Blame
and
me.
You know what? No, it all started out when I asked Dave if he was confident in me, and he said no. He threw me for a loop.
Number two, did you play with Kendrick Clancy? Kendrick Clancy.
Well, yeah, he played here, right? Clancy.
2005. You
there
are.
There it is. Okay.
I got to find one of the good ones. You don't get
Yeah,
it.
Give me
go.
A good one. Push the.
There we go.
Clancy. He's defensive lineman, right?
Defensive lineman.
Okay.
Right. Only 1 year with the Giants in 2005. I thought that was a tough one for you. But he did start 15 games.
I'm so mad at myself with James, with Williams. Right?
J-Dub.
J-Dub.
All right, folks, thanks for joining us. Rest of the show, we'll be joined by Art Stapleton for the Bergen Record. Just a reminder, next week we have our regular show on Monday at noon, and then the rest of the week the times are going to be shifting around and changing a little bit. So make sure you check Twitter, check Giants.com. We'll have the start time for all the
and
shows.
And you got me Thursday and Friday next week.
And you get
week.
Figo's 2 days next week. So it's a bonus week. You'll have me and Lance on Monday, and of course stay tuned for times the rest of the week. Now, here is me and Paul Dottino with Art Stapleton from the Bergen Record. Joined by Paul Dottino, as well as Art Stapleton, covers the Giants. He joins us on the phone right now on Giants.com. Art, you got Dottino and Schmelk here. How's it going, bud?
What's up, fellas? How you guys doing?
We're doing great, Art. Thanks a lot for joining us. Final day of OTAs. Let's start with the basic one. What has jumped out to you watching your third OTA practice in preparation to watching your third OTA practice in just a couple of minutes?
Well, I think number one is I never realized so many people cared about attendance at OTAs. That's number one. But number two, I mean, there's a spirit with this team. I think there's a confidence that, you know, they are a playoff contender. They won 11 games last year. But what you're looking for is you're looking for that hunger that, you know, they still have something to prove. And I do get that sense from the top down that, you know, the players believe that this is really just the first step toward really taking the field back in the playoffs and try to make up for what they did. And it's a long road, a long journey, and they kind of have to take those small steps. And you see the T-shirts all around the building. It's that 1% gain that McAdoo is kind of stressing this year, the idea of get 1% better every day, and you'll end up back where you were last year with a different chance to write a different script.
You know what? I want to address what you mentioned off the top. Let's get it out of the way. You mentioned people concerned with attendance. Any long-term impact here with teammates, coaches, performance of the guys that aren't at OTAs not being there?
I don't think so. I mean, I think you talk to players outside the Giants. You talk to players inside the Giants, people around the league, long-term Giants, long-time Giants. And it's just one of those things where, look, if the behavior, and we talk about Odell, if Odell comes in and does not act appropriately on his team and all of a sudden he changes who he has been inside this building for the Giants for the last 3 years, then there's an issue going forward. But there's no sense that that has changed at all. So I expect him to walk into the building for the first day of minicamp, and it'll be kind of a reunion. It'll be Odell and Olivier Vernon will come in, and, you know, the Giants will just kind of pick up where they left off as far as camaraderie goes. But I don't see it. I just, Ben McAdoo stressed that the spring is about evaluation and teaching, and then when you get to competition, that's the summer. Odell Beckham and Olivier Vernon, and just naming those two as other guys have missed along the way, you're not evaluating those guys. You're not necessarily teaching those guys. Those guys are about the competition, and I think that will come in July and August and then obviously in September when they tee it up in Dallas on September 10th.
You know, Art, a couple of words here that you've used in talking about this. You've used first step. You've used competition. You know, those words are so, so important for a guy named B.J. Goodson, who has the inside track to be the starting middle linebacker. And quite frankly, even assistant coach McGovern, who handles the linebackers here, does not know what he has. Because this is a kid who barely played last year, had special teams action, yes. But when you're the middle linebacker on a Steve Spagnuolo defense, boy, you are the heart, the soul, and the brains of what that defense is going to become. I think it's great that Antonio Pierce is here to tutor him. But my goodness, there's a lot of responsibility being put on this kid who right now is an unknown quantity.
I would agree. I had a good conversation with Devon Kennard last week about Goodson. I wrote a story on Goodson off of last Friday's OTA on NorthJersey.com. And what Kennard told me was, look, we knew when Goodson got in the huddle in the beginning of OTAs, all eyes were going to be on him, and he had to show us, us, meaning the rest of the defenders that were in the huddle with him, that he was ready. And he said he stepped in from day one and has not been overwhelmed by the moment, has actually commanded a huddle full of big personalities. You know, I talked to McGovern about that on Wednesday, the idea of, you know, is BJ that kind of guy ready to come in and do it? And he said it really starts with film study. If he knows what he's doing and he knows he can put guys in the right spots and they believe in his calls, it's going to work. And I think, you know, Paul, like you said, Goodson is the middle linebacker in base defense. But let's not forget, I mean, I don't think the Giants are going to put too much on him in the nickel. I think you're going to end up seeing Casillas and Keenan Robinson as the two linebackers in the nickel. So the idea is to kind of lighten the load across the board. But in base defense against, you know, Dallas Cowboys who want to run the football, B.J. Goodson, in an ideal world, is a key guy on that first night in Arlington.
Well, I'll tell you something else, too, and it kind of gets lost in the shuffle because we all do talk about the sub-package, you know, which may be on the field 65% of the time based on the way the NFL's played these days.
Even last year, Kelvin Shepard only played 25-30% of the snaps.
But here's the thing. When the other team's in the four-minute offense and they're trying to milk a lead, your middle linebacker is going to be on the field because it's a run-stopping situation, and he better be crying or calling out the right run fits.
And Art's right. Against
Otherwise,
Dallas,
you're not getting the ball.
And Art's right against Dallas more than just that, the way they run the football and play big.
So, you know, yeah, you're right in terms of numbers of snaps, Art, but the times that he's on the field could be very critical.
Yeah, no doubt. But I think they kind of groomed Goodson for this spot, though. You know, I think it was beneficial to the team last year that they played the veterans, that they didn't have to put too much on Goodson early on. You had a veteran defense for the most part, you know, and you knew the defense had to carry you. This year, it's been a whole offseason now for Goodson to be in this situation. Look, they are rolling the dice a little bit. You've got a second-year unproven player, but these guys got to step up. I mean, that's kind of, you know, in a dreamland, in a fantasy land, the second year for Landon Collins turns into somehow a second year for B.J. Goodson.
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
You know, the idea of getting that knowledge of being in defense, and, you know, look, he's not surrounded by other rookies either, and that's another big part of this, is that the rest of the defense is, I mean, outside of maybe Darian Thompson, who, if he's healthy, is going to be out there, are all veterans.
Yeah.
I mean, they're guys that basically know what they're supposed to do. So it's a matter of communicating the calls, but then it's about playing football. And he comes from a power program. I think Goodson will be okay. Would it surprise me if they try to work in another veteran in that Mike spot for the base defense? No, it wouldn't surprise me. But I'm not sure if they're going to go out and all of a sudden bring someone in to back up Goodson. I think they'll chart his progress and see how he goes over the course of training camp and then see where they're at, you know, come the end of preseason.
We're joined by Art Stapleton, NorthJersey.com, the record as well. Art, want to stick on the defensive side of the ball. Darian Thompson's back at practice. He's sharing snaps with that first team with Andrew Adams a little bit. But when they line up, as you said, week one against Dallas, would you be – or simply this way, how surprised would you be if Thompson is not the safety starting next to Landon Collins?
You know what? I don't know. I don't know if I would be, shocked that Thompson, if he's not the starter. I mean, if he's healthy, obviously, I think he's the guy. But, you know, Dave Merritt said it on Wednesday, you know, you can't take anything away from Andrew Adams and what he did last year. He's come back a little faster. So I could see the three of those guys. And look, you know, a fourth guy in Nat Burhey, you know, Merritt reminded us all the other day that Burhey was the starter last year in game one against Dallas. So in a 2-year span, the Giants' weakest position has become one of its strongest if Thompson and Burhey can stay on the field health-wise. And obviously there are questions, but Darian Thompson has a different skill set than the other three safeties that are on the field with him. So obviously, if he's healthy, you want to see him. You want to see him, and does he develop into that ball-hawking safety who can kind of be that prototypical free safety? But, you know, look, DT has looked pretty good so far. We haven't seen him open it up, and last Friday night in a charity softball game up in Pomona, I saw Darian Thompson playing first base in a charity softball game. So he's good enough to play first base in a charity softball game. And I think he actually ran around the bases, scored on a sacrifice fly. I think he's pretty close to them letting him open it up a little bit and see where he's at.
You know what, Art?
Look, it may not happen until August.
There's probably more contact in a charity softball game than CBA allows during the summertime,
yeah, no,
I'll tell you that.
No doubt, Paul, no doubt.
Hey, I'm going to stick to defense with you, Art, because I think from a numbers perspective, the defensive end spot has just got a lot of quantity. The question becomes, who wins that 3, 4, and 5 spot on the defensive end depth chart? Because the Giants right now got a lot of bodies out here. And let's face it, still, you don't know what Devin Taylor is going to bring to the table coming back from the Lions, because he's kind of a reclamation project. Okwara had flashes last year, but still not totally proven. Kerry Wynn's kind of been up and down during his Giants career. And Oladigizua, again, I think a bit of a mystery because of all the injuries that he suffered.
Yeah, I mean, you laid it out perfectly, and you didn't even mention Avery Moss.
No.
You know, the fifth round rookie, and at this point, you know, you start to question, you're like, all right, well, how is this thing going to sort out? Because you know you've got the top two, and you got JPP and OV, and the Giants last year, it became, you know, a narrative throughout the year that they were playing, you know, 99% of the snaps. So, you know, how do you get them to lessen the load as far as their snaps go? You mentioned Devin Taylor. I mean, could he be, you know, look, he started every game for Detroit last year, a playoff team, but he wasn't as effective, wasn't as productive. So there is that thought that if you put him into a rotation, maybe he's more effective, cut down his snaps a little bit. The three guys, I mean, Moss is making the roster. So the three guys that are going to have to battle, it's Okwara, Wynn, and Odigizua. And at this point, you have to put Okwara and Wynn ahead of Odigizua. I mean, I don't think the Giants, you know, as Carl Banks likes to say, it's on scholarship. I think Odigizua's scholarship has run out. And at this point, he's got to earn this spot. And I don't know right now, especially with all the questions coming out of OTAs, if he's put himself in position to compete in the summer, but he's going to have to work at it, and you know, we'll see what happens. But I'm interested to see where Devin Taylor fits in and how much Avery Moss gets early on, because if Avery Moss is just on the roster and he's going to be an inactive every week and he's not on the 46 on game day, I think it's one of those things where the guys ahead of him have to be producing behind JPP and Olivier Vernon.
Yeah. Art, how many defensive tackles do you think the Giants are going to keep, especially considering, you know, how Steve Spagnuolo likes putting his defensive ends, or even Devon Kennard, he did that in the last year, inside in pass rushing situations. Do you think they can get away with just keeping three?
It's a great question, Schmelk. I mean, I think, you know, obviously Tomlinson is on board, and whether or not he starts from day one against next to Snacks remains to be seen. You know, Bromley and Thomas, could Bromley and Thomas be fighting for one spot? I'm not sure. I think it's a valid point, the idea that in sub packages and those rush packages that the Giants have experimented a lot, using JPP inside, using OV inside, yep, using Kennard as a rusher. So there is that idea. Okwara can play both inside and out as a rusher. He had success a little bit last year. So I do think that, are they tempted to go with just three defensive tackles? And if that's the case, do you need two run stoppers to be up there? You know, you're going to have Tomlinson and Snacks. Do you trust that in week one against Dallas, against a team that you know is going to pound the football, do you want to go three and light at defensive tackle? I'm not sure you can get away with going three. I think you might have to go four, and it creates a numbers issues at other positions.
You know, it's funny, when you talk about the versatility of these linemen, John and Art both, we just had Chris Samarone, the former Youngstown State offensive lineman who does their radio games, on BBKL the other day, and he said that Avery Moss's best position might wind up being sliding down to the three technique defensive tackle, and that don't be shocked. Not only is he going to make the team, obviously, but if that's where he sees most of his snaps, he said that the comparison to being a poor man's Justin Tuck at this stage of his career is not out of line. And in fact, he said, I think he's more pro-ready than the third-round pick that the Patriots took from Youngstown State on the other side. So,
information.
So, yeah. I mean, that's telling me that maybe Avery Moss is getting a little overlooked in this equation too.
Yeah, well, maybe he emerges then as that guy, and then like Schmelk said, maybe you do go to three defensive tackles with obviously Tomlinson the rookie. I think a lot of it does have to do with how much can they put on Dalvin Tomlinson early. Look, he fits personality-wise. I asked Patrick Graham, the defensive line coach, the other day, is he the kind of guy, even though he's coming from Alabama and he's really impressed with us at rookie minicamp and, after he got drafted, just the personality, smart kid, we talk all about soccer and he's a musician and everything he can do. How much are the Giants willing to put on him early on? Are they willing to put him into, Johnson Hankins' role and say, let's go. It's Tomlinson and Harrison, and then the rest of you guys are kind of fighting for scraps. I'm not sure they're ready to do that yet. So it does create a great competition for the defensive tackle spot because you just can't say, well, we're going to go sub-packages the whole game. You're going to play teams that are going to try to run the football on you.
You will.
Especially Dallas. So I do think that do they go three defensive tackles? I think there can be weeks where they only have three defensive tackles up.
Yeah.
But the Moss thing is very good. The Moss Tuck aspect would really create. I mean, Olivier Vernon had great rushes last year from the interior with Kennard up on the line. So could the pass rush package be Moss, Kennard, Vernon, and JPP? We may be looking at that where one side, Moss will be inside, JPP will be outside, and then Vernon could be inside and Devon Kennard could be the other rusher on right end. So interesting concepts for Spagnuolo, and we all know Spags is all ready to throw that bag of tricks out there and do whatever he can to bring pressure on the quarterback.
And guys, I'd ask this of both of you. I mean, isn't it possible that when the numbers get down to crunch time for 53, they may just say, you know what? It's a defensive end against the defensive tackle competition because we like our six defensive ends a lot, and maybe we only like three defensive tackles.
Well,
and maybe the defensive tackles aren't fighting each other. They're fighting a defensive end.
Well, Paul, I think that's a great point. And, Art, I want to kind of bounce that into a separate question about the secondary. Are we going to get down to the point here at the end where you have cornerbacks competing with safeties
for
the final spot in the defensive secondary as well?
Well, look, Mikel Thompson's no dummy. When they approached him, I assume that when they approached him or if he approached one of the coaches and said, look, we'd like you to get some work at corner, I would think that he said, okay, no problem. Yep, I'm there.
Count me in.
As we've laid out the safeties, Mikel Thompson is the versatility guy. I mean, look, he improves his chances of making the roster if all of a sudden he becomes that – okay, we can put him at corner. It's almost the Leon Hall role last year where you can play corner, you can play safety. I'm sure Mikel Thompson will get some reps at nickel behind DRC. So that's a good spot for him. It's almost like I've called it the reverse Bennett Jackson. Bennett Jackson went from corner to safety, and before he suffered those injuries that really just crushed his time with the Giants, he was really showing something that you thought you had something. Maybe Mikel Thompson can go the other way and really develop. But, look, there are a lot of numbers. I mean, the numbers are there in the secondary, partly because of the strength at safety. So do they go light at corner and carry more safeties just based on what they have on the field and what packages they plan on playing, but in this league you can never have enough corners. So it's a great point. They're competing against other positions because of the versatility that Spags likes to have within his own defensive system.
And Art, in a way, they've got a similar situation on offense because if they have decided as a coaching staff that they want a fullback, well, Red Ellison can be that guy to play five or six snaps a game at fullback, and they can then, if they wanted to, cheat on the tight end spot. Same situation.
Yeah, Well, you know what? You cheat at the tight end spot, or does that create another spot? Does it allow one of these other tight ends? You know, Jarrell Adams has looked pretty good. You know, Matt LaCosse has looked pretty good. You know, they're competing to kind of show that, you know what, we have value on this team other than your tight end. Because we know in passing situations, you know, Evan Engram is the guy. You know,
right.
And you can talk all you want about putting him in the slot, putting him on the outside. Look, he's the tight end. He's on the roster. He's going to be the tight end.
He's going to play.
yeah, he's going to play. I mean, you know, you're not saying, well, we've got to decide whether we're going to get snaps for Will Ty or Evan Engram. Well, guess what? Evan Ingram's playing, you know, unless you see things in September that are completely unforeseen. But your point is well taken, Paul. But I think they got caught playing the game last year a little bit. I think they wanted to play that game with Will Johnson, that they didn't need to have a fullback, and I don't think they would have had Nikita Whitlock on the roster even after he got injured and you know, suspended and all that stuff. I think their plan was to have Will Johnson play that role, like you said, Paul, with Red Ellison. I think they've got to back themselves up a little bit more than what they did last year, because once that happened and Johnson didn't make the roster and was put on IR, I think that their entire offense, the complexion changed, and they became very predictable, as we all know. Mm-hmm. So I do think that Ellison obviously can fit that role. It's interesting to see, you know, can a guy like Mark Herzlick in an emergency, in a game, fill that role, because he's getting reps there now, not just as a member of the scout team, but he's on the field. And I think that maybe that's basically the main reason, in case of emergency, that he switched to 44, because in a game, if he's active, you know what? If Ellison is playing that inline blocking tight end and somehow he goes down, well, they don't have anyone to put in that spot. Maybe they can put Herzlick in an emergency in that situation. So really it's all about flexibility, but they've got to cover themselves, and they can't just keep one or two options available. They've got to give themselves more options, and I think your point is well taken. Do you start pinching at certain positions as far as numbers go, but then when you get into a game scenario, you could kind of get caught, and then it kind of really changes your game plan.
Sticking with the depth issue here, we're joined by Art Stapleton from the record, NorthJersey.com. Wide receiver, Art, we know who the top four guys are going to be. We know it's going to be Odell Beckham Jr., Brandon Marshall, Sterling Shepard, and, of course, Dwayne Harris. How many more do you think they're going to take? Where do you think it stands right now between Roger Lewis, Tavares King, and I'll even throw Travis Rudolph into the mix, the undrafted free agent they brought in. And what do you think that priority is going to be at wide receiver? How good at special teams are these guys are going to have to be to force them to keep six? How do you see that whole thing going down?
You know, it's crazy because I've gone back and forth, and you know, look, we all love Travis Rudolph's story. I wrote about it after the draft. I got a chance to talk to the family of the boy that he became very good friends with, Bo Paskey. I talked to them. I mean, it's a great story. I think everyone in the building, I mean, you know, you talk about the media not wanting to root. People are rooting for Travis Rudolph. He's a great kid and an underrated player. I do think he has a skill set that kind of fits. I think, I mean, I know we talk it all the time, special teams, special teams, special teams. The reality right now is Roger Lewis last year became an asset as a gunner. And Tavares King, one of the reasons why he wasn't on the field and wasn't active for enough games is not because he couldn't produce as a wide receiver. It was because they didn't have him in a role on special teams. So to me, I think if you're going to make this roster, you've got to – if you're King, but I think King has done enough as a wide receiver that they're going to have him as just a wide receiver. I think Rudolph has got to beat out Roger Lewis, and somehow if those guys can put pressure on Dwayne Harris to be a special teams asset. And right now, Dwayne Harris is an asset as a gunner, but he struggled as a returner last year. So Rudolph right now is working as a punt returner a little bit. If he could show something in the preseason, then maybe the Giants look at it and go, you know what, it's three guys for two spots. King's on the roster, and now Dwayne Harris. We already asked him to take a pay cut for this year. You know, is the combination of Roger Lewis and Travis Rudolph enough to compensate for what we might not get from Dwayne Harris on special teams. So that's kind of, I think, how this whole thing is going to play out. Gun to my head, I think Lewis and Rudolph are fighting for one spot. I think King's on, and I think Harris would be on as well. And then that's where it's going to go. I think Rudolph has to beat out Lewis. I don't think they're beating out King. I think the Giants liked enough what they saw late in the year that they want to make him a full-time part of this offense. But, again, it's June. That's kind of my opinion now. I'm not sure where we're going to be come August and September.
My last question kind of goes along the same lines here because, boy, the Giants are a pretty darn good team if we're talking about the end of the depth chart and how many good guys they may have to cut. Running back is the same situation. I mean, look at this thing, all right? You talk about Perkins for sure, Gallman for sure, Vereen is for sure, Darqua is kind of a mystery guy, and then don't forget they signed Drone as a free agent. I mean, by anybody's stretch of the imagination, they have one too many running backs already. But, again, injuries can always cause an issue, but the Giants need to sort that out too.
Yeah, and I think that's really, you mentioned the injuries. I mean, it's obvious. You know, look, they have two guys in Vereen and Darqua who, you know, have had their seasons ended by injuries more than enough times to know that, look, you know, we need to cover ourselves. And essentially, I think you're looking at, you know, Drone as the guy who, look, all right, we're going to cover ourselves. If Vereen somehow gets hurt again, we can put Sean in there, and he kind of fills that role. You know, if Darqua gets hurt, you can almost look at Drone again and say, you know what, he can be that guy at the goal line, a big more of a power guy. But I think it really comes down to how much do they trust Gallman with. You know, does Gallman show enough in preseason for you to say, you know what, we like our top three guys as Perkins, Vereen, and Gallman. And not just in roster, but in performance. Because then, now, a guy like Darqua 2 years ago was very good on special teams.
Yes.
He was excellent on special teams. Last year, his play kind of dropped off.
He was hurt.
Part of that probably had to do with compensating for the injury. So I do think that if Darqua wants to make this team and really make their decision hard, he's got to perform from day one on special teams in the preseason games.
Yeah. Final question.
Go
ahead.
No, that's all I was going to say. It's really going to be a great battle, and I think Sean Drone, I think a lot of people will be looking at him and saying, well, why is he on this team? Well, guess what? If he's on this team through preseason, it's because he's done enough to put the pressure on again.
Sure.
Those two spots, the Vereen and Darqua spots.
Yeah, absolutely, and he can catch the ball out of the backfield without a doubt. He did that in San Francisco a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Final question, all right, it'll be a follow-up on the running back position. How do you think the Giants are going to roll with their running backs this year? Is it going to be a two-headed monster situation with Perkins and Vereen doing the receiving and maybe picking up, you know, a handful, three, four, five carries a game? Or are they going to try to mix in a third guy to take some of those carries off of the shoulders of Paul Perkins? How do you think they're going to work that rotation?
Oh, that's a great question. That's a question that all fantasy football owners, I know Patino just cringed, want to know about.
The heck
Paul
with
Perkins.
Those people. I don't care about them.
I think that the Giants are going to put a lot or as much as they can on Perkins' plate. I think what he showed at the end of last season that he can handle it. Now it's just a matter of can he be that guy? You know, and I think in 4 minute situations you might want Shane Vereen out there, but I think they're going to give Perkins as much rope as he can take, and if he wants to take it. I think he's going to get that opportunity. I don't think they want to have a committee. So if I'm looking at it, I'm saying at least 70% of the snaps would be Paul Perkins if things go according to plan. If they're able to establish a running game and Perkins can get in a rhythm, you know, that's the other part of it. If they struggle, well, it's going to be, okay, Paul can't do it all. Let's bring in Vereen. Let's try Darqua a little bit. Let's see if we can get things going. But if Perkins comes out of the gate running well and this offensive line is improved, I think you're going to see Perkins get a bulk of the action in that backfield.
All right, at this very table, I've often had to say, Paul can't do it all, but that's okay.
I hear you.
Art, we appreciate the time. Good stuff, man. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Art.
All right, fellas. We'll see you next week for minicamp.
Absolutely. Art Stapleton from The Record. Final day of OTAs right here on Giants.com. We'll have coverage of practice and, of course, my notes and observations, Dan Salmon's outstanding players. As we get ready for mandatory minicamp, it starts next week on Giants.com. We'll be here. Make sure you stay tuned for coverage. Have a great weekend. We'll see you then, everybody.